Welcome home, brave heroes. I'm Ash, this is AshQuest, and it's time once again for the Bwodcast, the official podcast of AshQuest, the only podcast of Amalgam Ash Studios, LLC. And now we are syndicated on several platforms. It is audio only, no video to speak of. That used to be a YouTube luxury when I was filming the podcast, but now, since it originates from rss.com, it's audio. It's thrown out to a bunch of different platforms. If your favorite platform does not have it, drop me a line down below in the comments, and I will immediately look into seeing if I can't get it on that platform for you. Whatever it is, just let me know. The more education I have about this stuff, the better we all are. So, today's episode, I wanted to talk about something that could very well be a slippery slope into a deep rabbit hole that leads to a land that is far beyond the scope and scale of my humble dungeon crawl podcast, and I'm not sure how long I'll be going on about this. We might talk about it for the standard half hour, so pull out that set of paints and get your miniatures primed and ready, or pull out your magic decks for your card sortation. You know what? We've got St. Patty's Day coming up, and not in honor of that, but because she's just up here permanently. I have on my desk my warlock halfling from HeroQuest, and yes, she is officially a halfling. There's no halfling lore, but the designer notes of Shauna Nakazone say that she is a halfling, and that was published on Hasbro's website. Designer notes don't have to be published, so it doesn't get more official than that until they start referencing it directly in quests. And I've got my Magic the Gathering cards. If you want a really quick and easy way to get a St. Patty's Day sort of leprechaun association, I guess, you can use Gretchen Titchwillow. She's a legendary creature, a halfling druid, and she can be brought into play with a single green terrain and a single blue terrain. This is not a Magic the Gathering podcast, though. This is a HeroQuest dungeon crawler and dungeon crawl adjacent podcast. And I mean, we took a little bit of a segue into halflings. The Ogre Horde, against the Ogre Horde, is all the rage right now. But the thing that we're going to talk about is breaking away from that as well. And the thing that we're going to talk about is AI, artificial intelligence. Specifically, might I add, where it comes into play regarding assets that could be used to supplement, augment, or perhaps compete with our favorite dungeon crawler game. We have had some strong opinions over the last several months that I've observed in different places. I haven't gone on to search for these opinions. I've just seen them pop up. I'm sure that there's a lot more discussion, probably pretty deep discussion, probably pretty detailed. Hopefully very civil on both sides. And I say both sides, but I very much believe in spectrums. So I think that there's probably a spectrum of thought on this. And I decided to pose the question in my own Bwodcast Q&A, which is a channel in my own Discord server. You can find that if you go check out YouTube. I don't know if I have it linked in the podcast description. If I don't, I might look into that. But check out the description on YouTube, which is where people leave comments, and you can find it. And I asked the question, brave heroes, evil wizards alike, for the upcoming Bwodcast, I wanted to allow the ogres some time to breathe and get on a topic that one of my favorite content creators, Jordan Sorcery, has covered that merits as much visibility and discussion as I could offer. Again, within the limited scope, because this is a broad topic. Concerning the use of generative AI, or IA, and their ability to help creators create works of homebrew. So, what is your take? The first person to comment was Joe, who had a very well-worded answer. And we get nothing but civil in my Discord. I don't know if it's because I've just been blessed with a really great foundational community. If perhaps the very vibe that I give off just puts off people who want to be competitive, and so they just don't join to begin with, don't support the channel, whatever. All of that's totally fine. But really, we have a lot of really good discussion in here. Everybody took this subject and ran with it, but ran quite safely. So love that. Love that. Just wanted to give a special shout out and thank you to everybody who participated in this question and answer session and the discussions that resulted from it. So Joe says, AI is a handy tool, but it is a tool. It depends on how it's used. If it's just write me a quest using these monsters, then it's going to be as dull as dishwater. Only an artist who has a vision of what they want is going to get the best out of it. It's like a paintbrush in that regard. My eyes aren't good. I use head magnifiers to make up for my poor eyesight. Basically, I'm enhancing my skill artificially, but it is still my color selection. My overall vision for the model that will, with a degree of error, roughly be met. AI isn't creative. It just follows carefully chosen prompts. It can't imagine anything. It can only be derivative of other existing works. Now, let's say, for example, you didn't have arms or legs and wanted to create a piece of art. You could give AI very precise instructions to put this there and that there. It's just a tool following prompts, just as word processor corrects spelling and stuff. It can offer different ways of phrasing things. Let an AI create an entire essay, then see what happens. Garbage in, garbage out. Anyway, the thing is, AI is here to stay. It's not going away. You can't put the genie back in the bottle. As humans, we have to adapt and survive and perhaps support artists where it can. I mean, can AI be abused to create cheap knockoffs? Absolutely. Does it threaten digital artists? Most likely. But technology has already harmed most creative industries in that way. I know many pro photographers who covered events and gigs and stuff who were hit hard when Getty came out. Most now make their money doing wedding photos. It's unfortunately progress, and as said, nothing can be done to put the genie back in the bottle. So I'll hold off on commenting because my comments get a bit long-winded, and I don't have anything bad to say. I don't have anything really objective to any of that to say at this time. But I do want to go through several more of these comments before I break in with my own commentary to respond. I want to make sure I have time to give everybody a voice who participated in this Q&A. Rudolph 666, another great follower of the channel, very active member of the Discord. It's how you use it and when. Example, I used AI for a particular quest I made for a particular jam. How? I had written a riddle, but was afraid it was too hard. My other half, who does not know anything about fantasy, said it was. So I put the riddle to the AI and asked the five guesses, and it got it at guess two, so I know it's okay. On the other hand, if I had used it to create the riddle, I would think I suck. And to make homebrew cards for yourself and maybe others for free. We can't all be artists and graphic designers, and nobody would hire them for homebrew. I employ one for my company, not my hobby. Maybe you should give her a side project quest. Laughing emoji. Just a disclaim. I don't know. Sounds like a good idea. Jace came in with this following comment. The morality of it depends on the use and transparency. If I wrote a quest or campaign and wanted it to reach across different languages, I could use translation AI to do it. But if I had the AI write a quest in multiple countries, then I'm not really the artist anymore. A producer, director, sort of. If you're using AI art, it is morally the same as if you're photoshopping or using tracing paper on your favorite comics. Are you doing a parody or stealing an IP with an artificial accomplice? If you're selling it, does it directly infringe on copywriting or trademarks? If you're sharing it for the masses, know your audience or using it for personal homebrew, check with your group. If there is no absolute right or wrong, there is no absolute right or wrong unless a law is broken, fraud, counterfeit, etc. I used spell check back in high school. Guess in a way that is AI. Now there are built-in autocorrect that does spelling and grammar. You, me, and who knows who else probably use more AI than we know. I do have a response to this one that I want to break in with real quick. I would replace the term AI here with technology. AI is a very specific kind of technology. AI, we've used this term for things in the past, different technologies in the past, for sure. Including, here's a very static set of instructions. It's artificially intelligence. Well, looking back now, of course it's not. But that's largely because there's no intelligence in following a specific set of instructions. And using something that is generative or uses predictiveness to get things right and learning, machine learning, these are things that are quite distinct from a program that checks every keystroke to see if a word is spelled correctly according to a pre-existing static database. Even if the database was dynamic and you had people, a team of people constantly updating it, or people who were able to get in and edit the database anytime publicly, like a wiki, this technology would be pretty centralized still. It would be centralized through its use and through its scope and scale. And the artificial intelligence subject is quite different than just that. Of course, you could use it to spell check something. You could definitely use it to spell check something. You could definitely use it to translate something. And we've had technologies that can spell check and translate for a long time that are checking against an existing database. Pocket translators check against their own internal database. But this isn't the same as the current generative AI of which we speak. So just wanted to break in with that. And we'll go on to the next commenter, Ecto Libris. Ecto says, it cannot be stated enough that AI doesn't make art. It collages pictures from existing sources and blends them together, full stop. Nothing in any AI illustration was created from whole cloth by the algorithm. Nothing. As a graphic designer and artist, I don't personally agree with the use of AI for commercial art. However, if you are not selling it or trying to pass it off as something you made, sure, go nuts. In the case of using it to flesh out a custom quest with some spot illustrations or wicked cover art, and you're upfront about it and not selling it, then yeah, that's fine. But you didn't make it and you don't own it, so don't pretend either are true. That being said, there are libraries of royalty-free art all over the internet for personal and commercial use sanctioned by the originating artists. Maybe start there first. Frothybite commented, interesting topic we have here. I'm no AI expert, but here's how I understand it. These tools start with a basic model that then needs to be trained with a data set. Once trained, this tool can generate new, original content that is influenced by the training it received. I know these things can continually loop back on themselves at this point, but for simplicity's sake, model plus training data set equals tool, capable of generating new output directly influenced by the training data set. If you change the training data set, the tool is different and acts accordingly, generating different outputs. Please note, I didn't call the output art intentionally up to this point. Humans use tools, think of a paintbrush or a violin or computer, that have had hundreds, if not thousands upon thousands of iterations of improvements or changes over time, and each iteration created a more specialized version. I bet the first hammer was actually one's own hand. Ouch. Just breaking in really quick with a bit of stupid commentary. The very first hammer that I use is going to be somebody else's hand. But anyways, moving on. Frothybite continues, humans use tools to make new stuff, and arguably everything we make can be classified as art to the right person. Hell, this post is a new work, but it definitely has been influenced by my whole life's experiences, including education and ignorance on lots of things. Here are rhetorical questions. One, how is this AI tool different than a hammer, paintbrush, or computer? So, I know that, breaking in again here, I know Frothy's has had kind of a disclaimer on the use of tools evolving over time. AI tools are different because they, specifically the ones that are invested into. Now, I'm going to go ahead with a distinction here. We do have public access to tools on which we can train our own data sets. And we do have access to the knowledge to create our own generative artificial intelligence tools that we can feed our own data sets into to get these results. And at Frothy's point, they'll definitely go back on themselves, and you could have the same prompt typed in 100 times and get different results, dozens of different results every single time. Absolutely every single time. And if you don't get a different result every single time, then it's not really machine learning anything. It's not really the AI of which we speak. But the tools that large companies have invested millions and billions into at this point, not to get too far out there, these tools use the internet. They use the works of other people in a derivative manner. They're being machines, not able to have the concept or utilize the concept of inspiration. They canvas over works of art, not as if they are works of art, but as if they are simply numbers. And they look for patterns of numbers, the assemblage and presentation of which they have been rewarded in order to give good results whenever a generative text prompt is fed into them. So that's fundamentally how these machine learning algorithms are made and how they continue to grow. And when we talk about this kind of AI, we're really talking about all kinds of AI, I realize, because the question was pretty open. And I don't think that it's a big problem or some revolutionary terrible thing that people are able to create their own data sets and make their own AIs that are isolated to the data that they feed, the data that they have the license and right to feed into the machine learning algorithm. But the larger tools that scour the internet for things, you wouldn't be able to take a homegrown machine learning lab and say, please create a picture of Conan the Barbarian using, I don't know, Walt Disney's trademark style, while also using Finn the Human's sword, grass sword specifically from Adventure Time. And I would also like him to be standing over a damsel in distress, and I would like that damsel to be Marge Simpson. An AI that scours the internet is going to be able to put this together. The AI that you make at home probably is not going to be able to put it together. And if it can, then you have not fed it images and data that you have the license to use in that way. I guess unless you're allowed by fair use to use things for that. But the output, what then can you do with the output? So that to me is very different than hammer, paintbrush, computer. That is very, very different from a screwdriver. You, to Joe's point, are able to be in command and in control of what you've got going on if you are the one who also created your own model, if you created your own algorithm. If you pretend to kind of counterpoint that your AI is actually a person and you tell that person, I command you. You don't have to command them. You can request that they do it nicely. I want you to do this, that, and the other. They're still going to bring their own interpretation to it. And the AI model, as well as this hypothetical servant, they'll both have quirks that make the piece of art every bit as much theirs as it is yours. Don't agree? I'm going to use an old music example that I've thought about. It lives in my head rent-free. I used to subscribe to Keyboard Magazine. I'm not getting too off topic here, I promise. I used to subscribe to Keyboard Magazine and I would read it for the tech news and for their tech reviews. And I was very big on synthesizers and keyboards, and where my checks allowed, I would invest into hardware from time to time. And I read an article once that somebody was like really proud of the brand new Roland on the market. It had a very distinct sound. They thought it was so cool. Not proud. They were really impressed by it. They bought this tool and they made their music, their art, their creation. They were in full control of it. And they played the song that they made for their friend, and their friend was like, yeah, man. Yeah, that new Roland sounds awesome. I really dig its distinct tones and the way that it sounds. That synthesized, that's so characteristically Roland, you know? This was not a good feedback for the artist. Without sounding too pretentious, that the artist was more concerned with their music being seen for what it was, their composition being seen for what it was. And they realized in using a sound that was nuanced, but known to be distinctively Roland, they learned this, it dawned upon them, the great realization that a lot of creatives have at some point. The tool that I used is known for being this tool. And there comes a point where the tool is more known than the works that it's helping to create. That's not phrased quite the way I want it to be. When someone looks at your work, they see the tool rather than the work itself, you know? So in a way, Roland made the song. They didn't make the composition. They didn't decide the scale or the tempo. They didn't decide which notes would be which lengths. They didn't come up with the melody, the harmony, or any of the chords. But when you hear the song, you hear Roland. And that needs to be a legitimate point for some artists to consider, if not all. The tool that you're using has a very distinct style of its own. Now, you can go back over it. You can go back over whatever you've created, and you can make it more yours than has been taken away from you by usage of the tool. And that is phrasing that I think is, that's something that I believe in. I do agree that using a tool like this takes away from you as an artist. You could, in Joe's example, I'm not picking on Joe, that Joe made excellent points, and this is one of them. In Joe's example, as someone who's disabled, who needs these tools to be able to create art that they cannot create through conventional means, someone who may lack the use of their hands and who may not have the ability to learn to paint with their feet or mouth. Imagine such a lifestyle would be extremely challenging on its own anyway, but there have been, I bring up these points because there have been artists who were differently abled throughout the ages that make incredible works of art that rival a fully abled person because they learned to paint using different parts of their body. And that was, it's relevant to bring up in this case. But if you are using it because you don't have the ability to paint in any regard, then the work is still very much something that is the tool. It is following instructions, perhaps to the pixel. If that's true, if that's absolutely true, then it's not quite the same as the machine learning AI that we're talking about. It is, again, a very static set of instructions that a computer's following. So in that example, we're more talking about a very intelligent instruction following paint program, which of course you could use AI for if it had the capacity to remember all of the data on a given canvas that was, 4,000 pixels by 4,000, whatever, and keep that information up there without destroying any of it while you gave it instructions that were specific and you had the ability to undo or whatever. All of that's fine. That's a good use case for computers in general. Not quite the case for AI, though. Not quite the case for AI because you don't need it to be AI to carry out those instructions. Now, we could go ahead and transpose the artist into a human who, they were already a human, but into another kind of human who is fully privileged, fully abled. Perhaps they have a creative vision and they simply don't have the ability to make the art that matches the level of quality that they imagine in their head, or they don't have the time to learn how to make that art. And that is going to be the vast majority of artists in quotation marks, because they're not the full artists. They're only about half the artist, if that, making the work. That's just my ignorant opinion. That's going to be using generative AI. That's going to be the vast majority of artists in this sphere today that are using AI. And that's going to be their use case, that they simply want to make something for personal reasons or a game or a comic or an experience, artwork of some kind. They want the image out of their head and onto the screen. They want to use the tool to bring the thing that they are imagining to life. And perhaps they're using something like Stable Diffusion, which returns many, many results for one prompt, because that's how generative AI works. It doesn't have an exacting single result to give you. It is taking stabs in the dark with a little bit of light, and it is relying on your feedback to tell it that it does have enough light or it needs a lot more. And taking their image and running it back through, taking the best images, running them back through, like an acquaintance of mine I had, I haven't seen him in quite a long time, hope he's doing okay, who would create AI art for the sake of studying it. And would definitely show what he was able to make, but he would go through the entire process of how he made it. He was very transparent, and he never tried to pass anything off as quote-unquote his. He just said, you know, I gave it this prompt, and then it returned several dozen images, and I chose one. A lot of them looked very bad, probably due to the age of the tool at that point. This was a couple of years back, and AI has grown very, very quickly in a short amount of time. But fed the desired image or the most ideal image back into the tool with more instructions, and was able to refine it. And this didn't happen every time. Sometimes he'd feed the image back in, and instead of being refined, it came out worse. All of the results were simply worse. And again, this is more attributed to the age of the tool, or perhaps it could have been operator error. You know, he miskeyed a prompt, or at that point, the combination of prompts was just too much for the AI to really come back with something relevant for him. But he'd end up with an image that he was proud to show off, and he would let us know, you know, about how many hundreds, if not sometimes thousands of images he had to discard in order to get to that point. And like a use case like that's fine. It's still scraping. And I think that the act of scraping is probably the highest on people's lists of why AI bad. It's hard to say you can have one but not the other. You can have a tool that scrapes and provides people with something that helps them archive or bring to life a concept or an idea that they're not going to commercialize, that they're not going to claim as their own, that they're going to be transparent about, and present it to a very specific audience for a specific use case. I think that that's going to be fine. I think that, however, using your own art and training your own model, which I think this is going to be the extreme minority, this is probably the smallest minority of generative AI use cases. But if there is an artist out there who has simply drawn a ton, somebody like Genzo Man or something, who has drawn just so much art, and they fed only their art to the machine, and they gave all of their art different keywords and values, and they trained it properly, a process to which I'm completely ignorant. I don't know how long this would take. I don't know the scope or scale of that kind of work process. And then Genzo Man began to come out with more work at a rapid pace, but it was all AI generated, but it was still Genzo Man, 100% Genzo Man. That would be interesting, and that would also be fine. It would again be sort of a collaboration between Genzo Man and the tool, because again, the tool is taking an interpretation of what the right combination should be and is offering it up for Genzo Man to approve or deny. Much in the same way as if you sent out a pack of goblins to collect shiny rocks and bring them back to you, you're going to approve or deny those rocks. And if you show them to your followers, are you really going to say that you chose those rocks, that you collected them, that they're all yours? I guess you still could. It just depends on the context. But really, really taking something and no matter how specific your prompt is, and really the more specific it is, the more varied your results are going to be every time you run it on something that scours the internet for images and scrapes images and data from the internet, scrapes other people's works without their permission. I don't think that this is at all the same. And this is where a lot of different people are going to differ and be in different places on the spectrum of thought concerning AI. I don't think it's okay to scrape other people's works for the purpose of selling it. And the argument is going to be, well, a human can do it because a human can scour images and makes something that's derivative or inspired based on what they've seen in their life. But we'll get to that point, which is a pretty good point. But I've always known that that point was somewhat refutable. We're gonna refute that, or at least offer a counterpoint to it. Maybe not refute it. That might sound a bit pretentious. We are definitely going to offer a good, valid counterpoint to that, though, here a little bit later. We've got quite a bit to read through, and I stopped on Frothybyte's list here. He only got to point number one, which is, how is this AI tool different than a hammer or paintbrush or computer, before my interruption? But pardon my long, long segue and rant. Let's get to point number two from Frothy Bite and back to the comments. How is this different than a human being influenced by others' works of art and then creating something similar? Are we humans just complex models and our life experiences the training data? And I think it would be hard to argue that any musician or painter hasn't been somehow influenced by someone who came before them in one way or another. If I own, or am able to secure legitimate usage rights of, the totality of the training data, shouldn't I be able to claim ownership of that new output and to subsequently monetize it according to those rights? If I own, or am able to secure legitimate usage rights of, the totality of the training data, shouldn't I be able to claim the output as a new piece of my own art? Six, and final. What about public domain knowledge or art? Can I feed Mickey Mouse into the model and still call it my own at this point? How about if I use the US Constitution or Sun Tzu's Art of War? How much is to be my personal own to get that ownership label over the output? Unfortunately, US copyright law, has many nuances, and it's going to take years upon years to work its way through the legal system here in the US. Don't expect any pioneering leadership out the US Congress either for a long time. So a lot of my rant address those other points as well without me having read ahead to know what I was going to be responding to. I do think something that you make is going to be 50% yours, not in terms of rights or ownership, but in terms of how it was created. Ecto Libris had more to say. Being influenced by something is not the same as using the exact thing and literally blending it with something else. Influence in art is based on style or approach. How you draw or paint, not necessarily what you draw or paint. Repurposing art in collage or changing its meaning by juxtaposing with other images requires intent. You, the human, are deciding the placement and purpose. Prompting an AI with a desired outcome surrenders that control and doesn't end with the same effect. The dataset in AI training is what it uses to make different compositions. AI does not make anything, it just repurposes. It can understand what the elements in a picture are, and then when asked to make a new picture using different elements, it cuts them from its dataset and smooths them into the requested image. Now, let's go a bit further down, past conversation into new comments, and then I have a bit of an attempt here to corral the topic. Let me ask, how might this impact fantasy gaming, fantasy writing, fantasy art? Would you play a game that you knew was totally made with AI? Would you play a game that had assistance? Would you take steps to want to know? Do you care enough to look? Joe came back with, I think the end product should be held up to the same standards we would any other game. Buying a game designed by AI, wouldn't deter me from buying it. Only it being utterly rubbish would. I feel an AI game would probably not meet my standards of expectation. It's like if I wanted Tim Burton's Batman and they gave me Joel Schumacher's Batman and Robin. That's the deterrent. For some people, that's going to have the opposite meaning. If an AI produced a first-class product with no flaws, in short, I wouldn't care. Well, when I say no flaws, I actually like flaws. Makes it a bit more human. I mean a flawless imitation of a human-designed game. There would be human oversight in such a game, though. A lot. It would be needed. Ecto Libris says, I would never willingly support a game if I knew it was created, aided, or informed by AI, and if there was even a hint that it might be, I'd definitely want to know. A lot of my Kickstarter purchases are based almost purely on the art. Myth, Agents, Vast, Leviathan Wilds, all amazing art, and the artists in almost all cases were an integral part of the game's development. I really like seeing the dev teams and their different contributions. Frothy Bite said, I like how Joe phrased it. The game would need to stand on its own merit. I think I'd evaluate it just like any other purchase decision. Do I think I'm getting equal or greater than my personal subjective value than what I pay? Then definitely I'd pay for it. I think there's ethical considerations in that subjective calculation too. I've decided against buying things in the past because the producer may go against my personal values, etc., for example. So if I can go a little bit further ahead, the conversation somewhat ends. It gets into a bit of a discussion on a couple of nuanced examples. And we see some examples of AI-powered video game NPCs. Something I don't like to see because I think NPCs, well, there's not really a problem with it, but if you're using AI to make your NPCs and they all have that connection to your AI, to your data set, And they respond to the player, they're all going to sound like the same person. They're all going to sound like the exact same person. They're all going to have the same sort of reactions. You might be able to apply certain personality traits to them. You're going to have to if you want the game to feel good at all. You're going to have to take and apply certain keywords that are like, this is something they definitely will not talk about at all. Or, you know, this is something that they'll definitely try to help you with if you talk to them about it. And it could get kind of interesting. But I think personally, NPCs that are human written, not human edited, not human approved or denied, but human written, they'll sound so much more human. I think there's so many of us that want to sound a certain way, myself included, and we just don't unless we have the correct prep time and script writing time, and we get it all in one take, and we're just at the top of our game. But we're not the same person day to day. Sometimes we're not the same person in the same day, and that kind of goes a little bit outside the scope of the podcast and the channel and everything, but I'm just giving you my realist thoughts here. It's difficult to maintain the best version of yourself at all times, or the version that you would really like to show to the world at all times. Sometimes you do need a bit of a break, or you need to be able to collect your thoughts. And if you are approached in that time, that recharge time, you may not respond to things the exact same way as you would as when you were prepared. I mean, everybody's got reactions that aren't the same when they're unprepared versus when they're prepared. If they do, then that's fantastic. There are probably a lot of exceptions to this. There's probably a lot of people who live in the moment. They are totally comfortable with themselves day in and day out. I mean, I really try to be. I'm not too different when I put on my work clothes and go to work than I am now. The difference is I have to yell a lot because it's a loud place. So you really lose that ASMR voice quality that people claim to hear. And no, I will never do a podcast or video where I'm just constantly yelling at the camera. Do you have tingles yet? So anyways, I guess I am ready to kind of give my own two cents on this. And I kind of have, just by wanting people to make sure they understand exactly what it is that generative AI does, how it works, how it can work, rather, how it usually does work. I think that we're going to continue to see creations that are assisted with AI. I've reviewed a few of them on my channel, and it's not the AI that I want to support at all. It's the individual artists who, not people creating images in this context. I mean, the people who are making the product. And it's super, super important to me that they are transparent about where they get their assets from, if they got them from AI or not, because if I'm presenting it on my channel, then this is tied to me, and I want my viewers to know where they got their assets from, because it may be very important to a viewer. And honestly, that's all the stock I need. That's the only horse I need in the race. I really don't care if somebody agrees or disagrees with that. I need that transparency, because I have viewers who may not wish to support AI related things, and I support that. And I may have viewers who don't care, and I support that as well. In short, I kind of support, you know, all of my viewers, or try to, but doubtless there are going to be, you know, products that are way, way more created with AI than others, in terms of art, perhaps in terms of also text, perhaps the mechanic system was developed using AI. Perhaps there was absolutely no human editing or oversight in any way, just somebody who was really excited because they were introduced to a prompt to text tool and decided to give it prompts and were just riding that high. And then they got a hold of an image generation program, and then they rode that high and they were just like, this looks so cool. And you know, there is an innocent and naive purity in being so excited that you have access to tools that can create stuff like this. When you're exposed to that for the first time, it is mind-blowing. And some people get excited because they think, this is how I do it. This is how I can take those things that are in my head and make them real, finally. Because they've just never had time to think about what questions they needed to ask to start at a more humbled beginning. What did they actually need to know to do this in a way where everything would be more theirs and not only a tool represented piece. So I guess in the future, and this is something I've been thinking about as well, and it's not just like an announcement that I'm making here, I'm going to have to make it part of my official rules. I want to review the things that people send me, and I want to communicate with people and stuff that they talk about, the stuff that they want to have presented on the channel. And there may be a degree of influence of artificial intelligence that I actually reject if I think that it's promoting its use too much. It is here to stay. There's nothing that I can do to deter people from using it. And I don't really want to deter people from using it. I just want people to be educated on it. But I think that I definitely would not like to be known as the channel that just shows people AI art, HeroQuest card decks. So for that reason alone, I'm definitely going to have to make sure I filter and just ask a little bit more of those who would like their products on the channel. We have had a lot of stuff on the channel that has had fantastic art, and I've seen some great artists out there making stuff with all of the passion and heart that they want to put into such a project because they also love the games for which they're making the homebrew assets, like HeroQuest and the Chaos event deck from Italy. It has great art. The artist nails the old school feel. And that is something that I personally want to support. I personally want to make sure I support as much of that as possible with my money. I don't mind talking about and showing off things that are generated from people who may not be the best artists, and they don't really want to. They don't have the money, the resources, or the inclination to hire someone whose time, you know, deserves to be respected. Artists deserve to be paid, so it's completely understandable if you want art, but you can't use art from an artist because you can't afford to buy an artist's services. But, you know, if you do know artists, reach out. Reach out and see if there is anyone out there that would be willing to at least give you access to maybe something they've already made for the purpose of just sharing it with friends on your cards, your cool HeroQuest homebrew card system, something like that. There might be a lot of people who are generous enough to share what they have, or maybe even do a freebie, just a quick couple of sketches just to start you off, because they would rather you support your artists. Yeah, I was going to say your local artists, but you know, they're not really local. I guess they're local enough if you can get a hold of them on the internet, because it's not as if they're going to mail you the art pieces. But anyways, I would much rather support that. And to be completely transparent with you, I don't want anything that I create to have influence from AI, in generative AI in any sense. I don't use AI for text prompts. I didn't use AI to write ReWonderland. My wife did not use AI to draw the cover on the old version or on the new version. I will never have AI art on cards or assets that I produce and sell. And I am working right now on a deck of cards that are being illustrated by a very talented artist that I am paying. And it is a very slow process because I'm making this as I get the funds to pay for the art. So I'm actually buying the services a bit far and in between. Few far and in between. Few and far between. I think that's the phrase. I'm reaching out about once every month to 2 months to commission this artist under the same contract to be able to use this art in a deck of cards and maybe more in the future. And I'm going to continue paying him until I have all 15 to 30 of the cards that I want to produce. And this will be a deck that I'm very proud of. And I will make sure to be very transparent that AI was not used at all. And the artist is not using AI, because that's a thing that a lot of people are falling victim to, unfortunately. You get responses from a lot of artists online, perhaps Twitter. And Twitter our users, if you are wanting an artist and you ask Twitter for commissioned fantasy art, you will get a lot of hits. And be as choosy and as careful as you want in going through them, because a good portion of them are going to be bots. Another good portion are going to be people who only take your requests and convert them to prompts and feed them to AI to sell you. And then they're going to forget about the transaction and go right on to the next one. I don't use AI for initial drafts. I use my imagination. I don't use AI for anything at all. I did try to use it to learn how to syntax a few commands that I needed for my video editing process when I needed to cut out silence very quickly. And I wanted to use FFmpeg to help me with that. And it did not understand my request at all. It tried to give me a few things that none of which were real. They weren't real examples. I tried asking it how in Adobe Premiere Pro I could very quickly replace footage with footage that had already been cut. And of the 10 different ways it gave me, not a single one was based in reality. They were all go here, click this button, click this option. The option does not exist. There was no option with that name. There was no way to do what I wanted to do as far as the AI was concerned. So there's plenty still that it can't do. And thanks to the ever-changing nature of the internet, I think that this will always be the case rather than something that only gets better and more refined. And I think that, without leaping way, way outside the scope, and I guess it does leap way outside the scope and sale, I think your local country's regulations will very much put a damper on a lot of the more soulless uses of AI. Because there will be fines and fees before too long. But for now, we can use it for our personal reasons, our personal purposes. Those of you who are using it for commercial gain, please, please don't sell trash. Please make sure that you're selling good stuff. I don't like AI art. And yes, it is still extremely distinctive. It still has so many tells. It's still makes me feel like the entire product is close to garbage because it just doesn't have soul. If you've got a nephew or, you know, a niece or a family member who's an artist, an aspiring artist, and they would just love to see their art on your cards, I feel like that would sell so much more. That would sell so much better than cards that use AI art. Even if it's a kid's art, a kid's interpretation with crayon coloring of a goblin from HeroQuest as art, I would unironically buy that just because I think it sounds like a fun idea and it's a great way to get some kids involved too. Really great way. And just imagine the look on said family member's face when they see their art on a physical product. Priceless. You can't buy that. I guess you can. You can just buy the cards and then suddenly their art's on it. Priceless. Anyway, guys, this has been a really broad topic, and it's so broader, so much more broad than I could make it out to be. I had some hiccups here and there speaking today, and some throat clears. I'm going to try my best to get those cleaned up and edited so you're not listening to any of that crap. But, you know, the conversation continues eternally. If you want to weigh in, you're more than welcome to get into the Amalgam Archive, which probably merits a name change at this point, and go to the broadcast section and sound off, and I will absolutely welcome you to the server. Perhaps you have some very strong opinions on points A or B that I may have made or that one of my viewers have made here in the video, and I'd love to hear them down below in whatever comment section may be available on the podcast platform or on YouTube, preferably YouTube, because I check that frequently. And as always, I thank you very much for listening to me rant and ramble and read. So until next time, brave heroes, I hope you have a fantastic rest of your day, and onward.